and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report coming to you live. That's right, live and in living color. Don't adjust your sets. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. Broadcast live every weeknight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. It's the place to be. Also on YouTube Live and Blog Talk Radio. Got a great program lined up for you tonight. Oh, man. We've got
Stan Deo will be on in hour three, as always, each and every Tuesday. This first segment, we're going to be going through the latest news and important information pertaining to current events happening here domestically and around the world. And we got a special guest for you at 7:30 to 9.
That's right.
Both tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah, this is going to be a two-parter. This is part one of a two-part series. It's an investigative series, folks. I've been an investigator for 30 years, so let me just say this. There are certain events in history, just really quickly, and then I'll save the rest for our guests from segments two through four inclusive, but there are certain moments in history that provide opportunities for all of us to see the emperor without clothes. And one that we're going to be talking about coming out of the gate here, and that's Hillary Rodham Clinton's email server. You might get tired of hearing about that, but don't be, because there is some new information that also is suggestive of criminal intent. But let me back up and go back to the our guest tonight. It's going to be a Rex. His name is Rex. We're not going to give out his last name. And the reason for that is we know who he is. I've got his complete resume here on file at the studio. I know exactly who he is. I know who his colleagues are. But he's been threatened. He's been threatened. Threatened by the powers that are. And he's been threatened over his investigation he conducted into the apparent death of Loretta Fuddy, the downing of the aircraft on December 11th, 2013. Of course, Loretta Fuddy is the gatekeeper of the Obama birth certificate. Now, you might say, well, what difference does it make now? Who cares now? It's a little late, right? No. Because the same actors, the same perps, the same criminal conspirators are in power right now, as are the same people in the media. We're going to identify everybody. We're going to lay it all out for you. 117-page report, investigative report dropped on our desk. Well, not dropped on our desk, but given to us. Joe, you saw it, right? 117 pages.
Mm-hmm. About tonight?
You know what? Nodding doesn't do well on radio.
That's true.
Yes. No, but you saw it.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's my investigative opinion that this particular document exposes the criminal element of Obama, his people. Now, you might say, well, you know, who cares? We know he's a criminal. No. What's that? It's a PDF file.
Yeah. Okay. That's the same one.
Yeah. But, no, and by the way, we have it printed. We've got copies of it in multiple locations, as he does. There's audio and video assets files that accompany this report, which are being stored off premise. It speaks to who Obama is. It speaks to his cadre of conspirators. And it also identifies people in the press who are behind this regime of tyranny. And, you know, that word tyranny. Now, before I get started, I just want to mention that portions of tonight's broadcast brought to you by Elite Island Resorts. Do you ever want to get away? Boy, man, if you don't now, I mean, if you don't want to get away right now, yeah. How about getting away for the holidays, maybe? Or leaving the chaos behind in general. There you go. We found an amazing getaway at just an incredible price. If you go to our website, that's HagmanReport.com, go down and take a look, find the Pineapple Beach Club. This is, it's in Antigua, which is in the Caribbean or Caribbean. Depends on, you know, where you're from, right? But it's, this is a great resort. The, Antigua, they've got 365 beaches, one beach for every day of the year, but this is a fabulous, fabulous offer. Elite Island Resorts, the Pineapple Beach Club. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link for information. That's the Pineapple Beach Club in Antigua. And all of the information is contained at the website. Go to PineappleBeachClub.com. That's PineappleBeachClub.com. PineappleBeachClub.com. More on that later. But as I was saying, and Joe, well, we have to get through this really quickly, but I was saying, look, the tyranny that America is under, it is amazing to me, and this I want to speak directly to the individuals who write on the internet, who claim to be journalists.
Despite the amount of people in the media, very few I would consider journalists today.
Good point. You're exactly right. In fact, what's worse than a journalist who doesn't do their job?
A lawyer?
Yeah.
Yeah. The politician.
The politician, lawyer. No, it's, okay. Well, I'll tell you what's worse than to me. The journalist that doesn't do his or her job is a journalist who says, well, you know, I'm a conservative and I'm anti, or, you know, I'm working to expose Clinton, and is actually working on her behalf.
You see that a lot with the health stories that have come out about the Hillary Clinton health, where people, and from the New York Times, the Washington Post, and even on cable news networks will, you know, claim to be questioning it, but will then take, you know, a one-page letter from 2014 issued by her doctor, you know, years ago, stating it and claiming it as fact of a release of her full medical records, as one example.
Exactly. So what we have is we have certain people who call themselves journalists. They write columns. They write books to expose the Clinton cabal. When in fact they're not doing that, they're just seeding the other side. They're helping the other side because they're giving half the picture. It's kind of like Congress in a way. You've got Trey Gowdy and others, all of these House and Senate hearings. And you know what all that is? It's nothing but show. Because have we seen indictments from it? No. Have we seen any type of, anything from it? No, we haven't. Any meat. From the investigation. In my view, as an investigator and in an investigation, you conduct an investigation. It's not a career. It is a deliberate purpose. You do something, you investigate something to arrive at a conclusion. You either conclude that there's nothing there or there is something there. Right?
And to do that, you have to have an open mind and go into it as without any bias or opinion.
There you go.
As much as possible.
And you follow the leads wherever that they may take you. And once more, you might be sitting back and saying, well, what the heck? You know, I mean, this isn't first grade. We know this. But sometimes I think we have to be reminded of this.
Because what's happening now is the alleged journalists have their end result or what they're wanting to report, the way they want to report it.
That's right.
And then they work to find the facts to fit their narrative of the way things go or the party line narrative.
Exactly.
Rather than looking at it, you know, without any opinion one way or the other and saying, we're just going to get to the bottom of this based on the facts. They already have their fact and their storyline. They just are trying to fill it with as much as they can
But you know
that isn't damaging, that doesn't get to the actual bottom line and instead fits their narrative rather than the facts.
And you're right. And folks, I've never seen a more horrendous environment out there with respect to the journalists. I've never seen it. It's worse than any other time I've ever seen. These people are disingenuous and yeah. worse than that.
I watched Meet the Press, the whole Meet the Press show this Sunday for the first time, and I can't tell you how long. And it was just mind-boggling.
Traumatized
to watch. No, it was just very humorous. Chuck Todd is the host of Meet the Press, and they had they had Tim Kaine on, Hillary's vice presidential pick, which in a minute we'll get to. Somebody found in Hillary Clinton's book what she really thought of the Tim Kaine, the vice presidential pick. In her book, she writes about Obama's VP choice was very critical, giving odds to whom he may pick: Biden, a 1-in-2 chance; Bay, 1-in-4 chance; Kaine and Sebelius, both yeah. who I think are terrible choices, is what she said in her own book, writing about the 08 election and Obama's vice presidential pick, calling her own vice presidential pick, Tim Kaine, a terrible choice.
Yeah, well, he must have redeemed himself in the 8 years that she had to think about it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, getting back to the journalists, and the reason this is important is because you're going to find a lot of people, or not a lot, but a select number of journalists or reporters, investigative journalists, authors, just really polluting, contaminating the truth pool.
Yeah, and my point about the Meet the Press,
yes.
Chuck Todd, and he had Tim Kaine on, and then he had a Trump campaign manager, a woman I was unfamiliar with. But and she did very well, unemotional, even though this Chuck Todd was attacking her and the campaign about the birther issue. And when she went on to say that, you know, Hillary Clinton started the birther issue, he kept yelling, "Two wrongs don't make a right," and he would not get off it. And the campaign manager even pointed out, she said, "You know, Chuck, I checked the Meet the Press website, and not only was that birther issue not in the top 20 things your audience wants you to talk about, it wasn't even in the top 40. But he wouldn't stop harping on it. And you see this bias. And
well, okay, what does that say, though? No, that's interesting because so the public doesn't care. Is that what you're saying?
The public, that was not on the top 40 of issues that the public asked Chuck Todd to ask these two people about.
All right. Well, yeah.
And there's a screenshot of the book, folks.
Yeah, that's. But you see, what does the birther issue, or what does the natural born, the birther term is pejorative, and I'm not really in favor of that, but what is the natural born citizen clause for the Constitution? What does that really mean, and why is it in there? Because it was put in there because the founders of this country did not want somebody from England to be running this country.
Exactly. And when you think about how much of the Democrats and their covering media have gone out of the way to not only go against the Constitution, but to cover up these unconstitutional issues from the email scandal to Barack Obama's birth certificate, they have covered this up. The only time they use the Constitution is when they plead the Fifth Amendment in court, apparently. Other than that, they want to dismantle and destroy it, or do not care about it, or refuse to follow it.
That's right.
And this is just one of those examples where, you know, even in the 08 election, they tried to hold McCain to a natural-born citizen clause and say he wasn't eligible. And with Obama, they ignored it. Even with Ted Cruz in the primary season, they
right.
ignored it.
And, you know, that, by the way, McCain resulted in a Senate resolution to say that he was qualified. But what I found very interesting is the fact that the conservatives right now, with respect to Cruz, their position is, I don't care. I mean, Obama got away with it, so why do we have to play by the same rules? Since when do we become a lawless, do we have lawlessness like this? It is absolutely incredible, obviously, in my view. It's, when I say incredible, perhaps by definition. But it's, what is that, was that the Secretary of State? President? What? Eric? The red phone. Oh, okay. Had the red phone. So, the red phone went off. Yeah. All right. But by the way, folks, we do have limited advertising opportunities available. If you are a business owner, if you've got a product, if you've got a service you would like national exposure to, tune in or tune in. Go to HagmanReport.com or HagmanandHagman.com. Click on the advertising opportunities box there. Read all about the advertising opportunities we have for you. It's really a great deal. Get your national exposure, much like, well, much like Elite Island Resorts or Pro Flowers or Omaha Steaks, and I can go on and on and on. Did various countries, Casper Mattresses and such. We have that available to you at a very good cost, very competitive price. You can get your product or service out nationally and internationally on this radio program. I would urge everyone to check it out that has a need to advance their or to get their exposure to their product or service. But you know, so are we okay? No. No. So, hang on a minute. We're going to take some housekeeping
here. We're fine.
Yeah, we're fine.
But Stan's not going to be joining us tonight. Folks, keep Stan in your prayers. He is under the weather.
Okay.
I won't get into any more details. He can explain later, but nothing serious. He's just not going to be on tonight.
All right. So that was the red phone?
That was the red phone.
Just a select few people have that number. Stan has it. And speaking of that, I was talking to Steve Quayle today, and just an amazing guy. I think he's going to be on next week. We're putting up a program together. We're actually Steve and
next Wednesday, the 28th.
Right. And more information about that. We'll let you know more about that. But Steve's a heck of a guy, and just some of the things that we talked about off air. Just stuff. All right. Anyway, and people are saying, "Would you finish a sentence?" Yeah. Look,
it's one of those days.
So, about the journalists and about people, here's the issue. You've got the natural born citizen aspect, the eligibility of Barack Obama, important for the following reason. Because it's a matter of allegiance. It's a matter of law, lawfulness, not lawlessness, but it's a matter of allegiance as well. And that's what people are not getting. They're not understanding. And they're conflating natural born citizen with born in the United States. I mean, somebody could be born on the steps of the Capitol building, all right, with the Kennedy family serving scotch in celebration. And it's very possible that that baby being born would not meet the requirements of a natural born citizen. Okay? Just so you understand that this is a complex issue. And others will say, well, that issue was resolved through various cases. No, not necessarily. It's kind of like this election issue if a candidate drops out before the election day. What happens if the party's nominee drops out before election day, which is very possible given Hillary's illnesses? And I'm going to just start referring to, and I think maybe we should do that, Joe, we should just start referring to her illness, because I don't think anyone of reasonable intellect can doubt that she's ill.
No, and the latest just came out here a few minutes ago. With Trump regaining North Carolina lead, Hillary unexpectedly postpones local fundraiser without reason.
Mm.
And her campaign staff has cited that her pneumonia is back. And that's confirmed.
Wait a second.
That's
confirmed. She's actually stopping a fundraiser?
Yes.
Oh, that must be real tough.
Last week, she sent her husband, Bill Clinton, to...
In her place.
In her place. To these $50,000 plate. We talked about that. The Hollywood fundraisers.
Yep.
That, you know, have these big name celebrities and leftist backers. But even on the front headline of Drudge right now, if you look, that has a link to the Zero Hedge article, but the title on the Drudge report says, Hillary cancels another one. Trump says, sleep well. And with only, 49 to 50 some days to go before the election, she's not scheduled to speak until, it's been 7 days, a period of 7 days. And this is after a period of, 5 or 6 days. And you look at her attendance, you look at the rallies that are there, the attendance that are at the rallies, and they're just dismal. I saw a great comparison yesterday where the last Hillary rally at Temple had, a couple hundred people, while they showed a picture of the venue Trump filled, and it was over 31,000 at a arena or stadium.
Right. Yep.
And Eric and I were talking before the show about... We both listened to Herman Cain when we came in the morning, and all the callers that call in, and they're pointing this stuff out. And even Hillary's own comments about, and I like this, Trump brought this up, and I heard this on a sound clip, about how Hillary called half of the Trump supporters deplorable, you know, racist, xenophobes, and used the word the baskets of deplorables. And Trump made the point that Hillary Clinton talks worse about American Trump supporters than she does about radical ISIS. Islam or an ISIS. And it was a very good point. But it'll be interesting to see. I wouldn't be surprised if Hillary canceled the debate performances.
Ted Brewer and I were speaking about this today, and I don't believe that she can withstand the debate itself, at least not Hillary, the real Hillary. And we were also talking to, you know, the change in her appearance is the obvious change. And this goes right into like a conspiracy kind of mindset. Oh, is there a body double? Well, you know, look, we're all adults here, are we not? We know that people of prominence, good or bad, have body doubles.
Hitler had body doubles. Stalin had body doubles.
Saddam.
Eric had body doubles. Saddam had at least four body doubles. Yeah. It's not uncommon at all. And it has not. I mean, this has been something that's been going on since politics has been around.
So, I mean, is it possible that there's a body? Sure, it's possible. Again, we're all adults here. Let's address these issues with both honesty and sobriety, you know, without going crazy over it.
Yeah, when you get into the body double stuff, as important as it is to point out, with what Hillary's already done to herself, from Benghazi to just all the different scandals, the email scandal, her tenure at the State Department, pay to play, the Clinton Foundation, the foreign government money coming in for favors, which is pay to play. There is enough to just crumble her on her own words, on her own actions, past actions, and even what she claims she wants in the future for America and what she's going to do if she becomes president.
Yep.
Like, when she becomes president, the first 100 days, she has a plan to reform the immigration situation, even worse than it is today.
Yeah, just open up the chicken wire fence down at the southern border.
George Soros, one of the key backers of the Clinton cabal, crime family, and political branch, is now putting up $500 million to continue the immigration push into the Western civilization from war-torn Muslim nations.
He should be he should be arrested, in my view, for treason. I really think, or if not treason.
He should have been arrested when he was younger for turning on his own Jewish people and. That's how he got his start, was turning over Jewish people to the Nazis, and he was Jewish.
How much you want to bet that Soros will be lauded as a big time philanthropist? You know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. Well,
that's how these people think they can cover their sins, is through their, you know, if they have $1 million in a year they give away in charity, they think that they can, you know, do X, Y, and Z on the other side.
But this will be depicted that $500 million that's going to tear down the various countries, the culture, borders, and language of cultures of different countries, that is going to be looked upon as something philanthropic or altruistic. And when it's just the opposite, it's to tear it down. I mean, anyway.
We're coming up against the break, and before we get to our special guest in the next segment, and I know we're going to hit news now in the last hour since Stan's not going to be on. That'll give us a chance to catch up on some of this news that has been going under the radar with the different terrorist issues and other things that have been going on. This really caught my attention today from the Times of Israel. Obama says this in the UN, to the UN today. Israel cannot permanently occupy, settle Palestinian land.
Ugh.
Barack Obama said on Tuesday that while the Palestinians should reject terror and incitement, Israel must recognize that it cannot permanently occupy and settle Palestinian land. Surely Israelis and Palestinians will be better off if Palestinians reject the incitement and recognition of the legitimacy of Israel. But Israel must recognize it cannot permanently occupy and settle Palestinian land. We all have to do better, the president said at the 71st session of the UN General Assembly in New York. In his wide-ranging address, Obama sought to use his last appearance before this global body to define how his leadership had put the world on a better trajectory over the last 8 years. At the heart of his approach, Obama said that the notion that conflicts are best solved when nations cooperate. The president cited his administration's outreach to former adversaries Cuba as examples of progress. He also cited the resolution last year of the Iranian nuclear issue through diplomacy as a key achievement over his past 8 years. He says this is a less violent and more prosperous world with him as at the head of the U.S. presidency.
Oh, man.
But with one rife, uncertainty, unease, and strife as nations struggle with devastating refugee crisis, terrorism, and breakdown of order in the Middle East. He says despite enormous progress, governing has become more difficult and tensions are more quick to surface, adding that the world now faces a choice to press forward with a better model for cooperation and integration or retreat into a world that is sharply divided. This is the paradox that defines the world today, Obama said. We must go forward and not backward. And it goes on from there, folks. If you want to read what he said, you can find the video of his speech, or you can just go to the Times of Israel and see what they have segmented from that speech and put in their article, because it's very important. And he also said something to a black caucus where he said that it would be a stain on his legacy and that he would take it as a personal insult
if you don't vote for
Hillary Clinton. Was not elected by, and the black community did not activate itself for the election of Hillary Clinton, making the presidential election this time around, trying to make it about him. Well, it's not about his legacy. No. It's not about his, you know, what's good for him. He wants the globalist agenda to continue. He wants Hillary Clinton in there to continue what he's already begun to unravel. And surely she will do a lot more than he did in the course of destructing this nation. She will finish off what he started. And you can take that to the bank. Folks, we're going to be right back after this short message with our very special guest. Right after this.
We got we got some information for you. We're going to be talking with a gentleman by the name of Rex. No last names here. The reason for that, both he and his colleagues have been subjected to threats, harassment, with respect to the documented, discovered evidence they have about what we're going to be talking about now. Some of the threats, by the way, have already been fulfilled. If that sends a chill down your spine, it certainly should. We're going to be talking about, in particular, the events that took place on December 11th, 2013. And if you're in a Hillary Clinton whining mood, you might throw up your hands and say, what difference does it make at this point? Well, it makes a lot of difference. Here's the deal, folks. On December 11th, 2013, the gatekeeper of Barack Hussein Obama's birth certificate, you know, when that long form birth certificate, that everyone says is a fraud, or not everyone, many people say it's a fraud. It's made out of whole cloth. It's a composite. It's layered, and on and on and on. Well, the gatekeeper, the person behind that document, was one of 9 passengers in there, a small plane that went down off the coast of Hawaii. 12/11/13. And with that, she was the only fatality out of the passengers. And she reportedly died of a heart attack or some sort of heart event that took place. That's where the mainstream media stopped with this. Folks, you may remember, those of you who were with us a year, 2 years ago, I guess it was now, you may remember a woman, Butter Dezillion, coming on the, and that's an internet nom de plume, but you remember her coming on and talking about the FOI requests and Freedom of Information Act requests, that is, and the FOIA requests that were needed, and she plowed through a lot of them, got a lot, In fact, you helped us with the fees. When I say us, it was her and myself, and you sent in money to offset the fees, which were oppressive at the time. But she, more accurately, went after him, got him the papers, and that set the groundwork, the foundation for the investigation, the results of which you're going to hear today from Rex. Now, Rex is an aviation and computer executive. He's been that for many years. He's been an FAA certified single and multi-engine commercial pilot, instrument airplane flight instructor for nearly 30 years. So he's no young chicken. He's credentialed. He's got the documentation, I believe, the smoking gun documentation that'll rock your paradigm in terms of what happened on that day in December 13, but not just what, the who behind it, the different agencies behind it, and the reason that it happened, as not only the reason why it happened, but why it matters today. In fact, maybe even more than ever, why it matters today. You see, I believe when I looked at this massive investigative work product, and it is massive, we are fortunate enough, by the way, the Hagman Report is fortunate enough to be at the point on this, at least now, bringing you the some of the diagrams, pictures, and information contained in this investigative work product, which I would match against anything, any investigation out there. If I could fly a single engine or multi-engine plane as well as Rex can put together an investigation, able to do dogfights in the air. And I'm not blowing smoke. I mean, this is an incredible document. And again, we have it exclusively here. The reason this is important, of course, and I'll just say this, through much research, Rex and his colleague, they've been able to determine many of the important details concerning the fighty plane crash that took place on December 11, 2013. They began with merely suspicions, and despite repeated government intransigence, records of destruction, delays, false starts, assertions of classified evidence, obfuscations, and officially claimed disinterest in the story, they've uniquely learned through diligent research and responses from their inquiries to government agencies that the event was clearly a very intricately planned hoax and fraud, which was the product of a corrupt, coordinated activities among several organizations and individuals, at least some of which are highly placed within the United States government, and they're facilitated by the press. But Rex is going to come on here. He's going to show the evidence, and if you're watching this via YouTube, it'll be on your screen. If you're listening to this via Globalstar, just go ahead and start up go to HagmanandHagman.com, click on today's program, and put it on your computer screen. If you're watching this, tell others. We need to get this word out. We need to get the word out about this, because lives hang in the balance. Frankly, I'm a little bit concerned about Rex and his colleagues, because there are issues regarding his safety. I gave you his background. I'm not going to give his last name. We know who he is. He's been vetted thoroughly by us. We have his resume on file. We know where he lives. Last time somebody told me that, didn't end well. But having said that, Rex, thanks for joining the Hagman Report, buddy.
Good evening, Doug. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Yeah, we can. Can you hear us?
Very good.
It's all good. And I'm just going to direct the people, if you're listening to this, however you're listening to this, if you want to, and if you can, please go to our YouTube live stream, where this will be archived as well. So if you're catching this on the archive, you can listen to it via Globalstar or BTR, and go back and look at the documentation via YouTube Live. But Rex, so you've been an aviation and computer company executive for a number of years. You're a FAA certified single multi-engine commercial pilot, instrument flight instructor for nearly 30 years. And you you were handed this case to investigate because of your knowledge and background.
Yes, I was kind of brought on to the scene a little after things began, particularly by my colleague with whom you had spoken before on the radio.
Okay.
And I was brought on because I had some aviation experience that Butter Desilian did not have at that time. So really maybe a month or two after things were happening, say in early February or so of 2014. And it was really because Butter Desilian had some questions, and I seemed to be able to answer the initial ones, and then we just got deeper and deeper into so many more aviation things than anyone really expected. So hopefully I can lay out those kinds of things. Yeah. Butter Desilian has been particularly the person to honcho all of these FOIA requests and get behind what these agencies are really trying to do in delaying those responses and so forth. She's been just tremendous and amazing at that. And she's gotten a name for herself across the internet as being one of the finest researchers that you could ever find out there. And there's one place, the Foggy Place, you might have heard of. They have an entire multi-thousand post thread devoted to, in some sense, honoring her, not positively, unfortunately, in that case, but recognizing the talent she has. She is a master at all of this, and hopefully that'll be able to be read throughout time as people look at this case and see how it was cracked.
Rex, let me start out by asking you this. Why is this particular, is the death or the ostensible death of Loretta Fadi, the soft plane crash in 2013, at the end of 2013, why should anyone care? You know, I always see, especially among conservatives, I always see this, well, you know, that's yesterday, or that's just so yesterday. Oh, that's old news, or, you know, there's this resistance. Everything's a diversion except the issues, and then the issues become a diversion. It's just a constant fight. So you and I had this discussion.
That would seem to be the case, but it's not at all, really. That is, what's new seems to be of interest to everyone. What seems to be old is old news, old hat. And the implication would be that we know all of about that, and it's all in the past. But the long and the short is that through manipulation, and in this case, maybe the government and or media, we don't know this story at all. That is, people who want to do diligent research, and before they would say anything in public that would be just kind of a conjecture or a shot in the dark or just some wild-eyed idea that isn't supported, people like, hopefully myself, are only going to come out with such a thing if we have really solid evidence. And the information that's out in the media is not anything like that. And it hasn't been that way for years, because this evidence has been so slow to come out.
I've never seen, when you say painstaking research, I've never seen someone really cross the T's and dot their I's. I mean, there is not anything out of place in this. And you worked extra hard because you knew you're going to be up against this tide of doubt. And, you know, you were going to be the brunt of criticism and calls of conspiracy kook and nut and, you know, whatever. So folks, when I tell you that this investigative work product to me is I mean, nothing is infallible, but man, I would walk into any courtroom in any venue in anywhere in this country and present this. That's how much, and I've studied this for now for a couple of weeks, I guess it is, And Rex, I got to hand it to you, man. You really did an outstanding. You and your colleagues did an outstanding job on this. I just want to just really drive that point home.
Thank you very much.
And again, if I could fly as well as you could be, as well as you can investigate, I'd be out there doing a dogfight. But anyway, all right. So we set the stage, and I will say this: this is part one, folks, of two parts. We're gonna bring this gentleman on tomorrow as well, because there is so much here and there is so much critical information. This is now we got what three segments together of this program. We're gonna try to get through as much as possible. But let's start at the beginning and let's start where you want to start, because I know you've been working on this for this presentation tonight. Go ahead and make your opening statement, if you will, or start where you want. If you want to make an opening statement in terms of, you know.
If you could have your tech back up one slide there and look at the map that has, it'd be IO1, image okay. one, in other words.
Yep. I'm going to, because of certain things that are taking place, I'm going to do that myself here.
Okay.
Okay, there we go. We're ready to go. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the crash happened on December 11th, just as you said, December 11th, 2013, and it happened near the island of Molokai, which is in the middle of the Hawaiian island chain. I don't see it on my screen, by the way.
No, you're going to be on a delay because of
that's probably
about a 30-second delay.
Very good. And near the island of Molokai on the northern side, there's a 5-square-mile peninsula. And that's basically called Kalaupapa. And this crash happened just off the northwest tip of that peninsula. And there's a runway on the northwest side. It's 2,700 by 75 foot. And it's designated as two different things, either from one side, runway 5, or the side that was used, runway 5. And coming from the other direction, it would have been runway 23. But there was just a lone pilot of a single-engine Cessna Grand Caravan who took off toward the northeast that afternoon at 3:15, which was, by the way, a scheduled commuter airline flight. And he had with him 8 paying passengers. So he had first told the FAA that he was going to Oahu, indeed. That was the scheduled flight. And as he was turning the corner toward Oahu, or Honolulu, I should say, which is approximately west. Marked on that map on the upper right side, you'll see a little X in the upper right corner. That would have been about where this pilot was at 300 feet, as he said, or he told the FAA. And we know the crash into the water happened at very close to the capital D. That's a little bit to the southwest, if you will, or west of that X. The map is turned a little bit. You can see there's the word north there, perhaps, on the far upper right side. Yep. In any event, the D is where the airplane came down. And that would have actually put the wind at the pilot's back, because the wind was out of the east. So that trajectory between the X and the D is approximately a westward heading, and the pilot had an eastward wind of approximately 18 knots to blow him toward the west. So it was he was being sped up by the wind behind him.
Okay, and just so for the people who are listening who don't have this visual in front of them, what we have is the island, and on the north side of the island, northwest side, basically, or near the shore, is a runway. That runway goes from southeast or southwest to northeast, or the opposite direction, depending on which runway you're going to be using, or which designation of the runway you're going to be using. And then, so this aircraft took off at 3:15 with 8 paying passengers. 9 people aboard altogether. It took off to the northeast, made kind of a left-hand turn, and landed, crashed, if you will, in the water, very close to shore, almost, almost even with the runway itself, just west of the runway, just right. Right offshore on the west side of the island. Okay.
The salver or the wreckage person, the president of that company who did the wreckage salvage operation, had said the aircraft was found between 200 and 300 yards from the shoreline. Although that was, well, we'll talk about that later. But anyway, as the pilot was making this turn to Honolulu at that red X or thereabouts, at what he said was 300 feet, he claimed that there was a catastrophic engine failure and that the engine completely stopped. So that issue actually differs from what we see with the evidence. And that was one of the first things that brought me into this investigation and said, how can that possibly be? We have a commercial airline pilot with 18,000 hours of flight time, and he is taking off from an airport with 8 paying passengers. And before he reaches 300 feet, he's made roughly a 90-degree turn. Well, that's just kind of unheard of in the commercial commuter airline pilot world. You don't make such turns that close to the ground. It would have required what he said, would have required him turning almost immediately upon rotation. And that's just something that the FAA frowns upon. And commuter airliners, airline companies such as the one for which this pilot worked, would have had procedures that would have trained their pilots not to do such a thing. So for the director of operations, which he was, this pilot was also the director of operations for that company, for him to make a 90-degree turn before he reached 300 feet in altitude is just mind-boggling for a pilot. Furthermore, with his flight from that red X with an 18-knot wind at his back, to land at the capital D is also mind-boggling because you don't land an airplane downwind when you have any other option. So those were anomalies that really raised red flags in my mind. But as we'll find out later, his story changed, and the evidence certainly doesn't support his story.
Okay.
So if we look at... Well, let me back up a little bit. We have a very unusual circumstance in that there was on board in seat 4B, which is on the right side of the aircraft, a young man who has a lot of spearfishing experience and snorkeling as well. And he has had use of GoPro equipment, which is a small, high-definition camera that can take very high-quality images. Now, he happened to have at his seat two GoPro cameras on a staff, and they were waterproofed. So it was very convenient that he, not in the overhead bin above him or seat in front of him or at the feet in front of him, he was able to pull out from his seat, literally his lap and the seat back pocket, this camera equipment, which then he was able to use for the rest of the time. He said after this supposed bang of the aircraft's catastrophic engine failure happened, he turned his camera back on within a few seconds and basically continued rolling until his batteries exhausted themselves. So he's got two cameras on this staff, and they're both apparently running. And that's how we come upon this story, which has that video support that is almost unheard of. That is, it's very rare that you'd have this kind of situation. But
Rex, hang on a second. Just to be clear here, we have on video, or there exists on video, a nearly complete representation or documentation of an airplane crash, this particular crash, by one of the passengers from two of his GoPro cameras, right?
In as much as you can see from C4B and out the window and so forth, that's the case. And he also shot imagery from inside the cabin. So we have a lot of information. And yet, I'd have to say at the same time, what the NTSB was given, apparently by this videographer, ended up to be less than 19 minutes worth of video. And what happens there in that video are things that transpired over nearly an hour's worth of time. So it's kind of amazing that there would only be, from two different cameras, less than 19 minutes worth of video. So one is tempted to think one does not have it all, even though in part we see an activity that occurs almost an hour after the crash. So the pilot or the videographer represents that he turned his camera back on and just kept right on rolling, and it was only the running out of battery that stopped his recording. So, as I say, I have no evidence exactly what that was. It's the absence of evidence, except to say that what he's represented seems to suggest we would have a whole lot more video, maybe even eight times as much as we actually have. But anyway, let me back up to part of the rest of the story. I said that the pilot had told the FAA that he was rounding the turn to Honolulu at about 300 feet. Well, by the time he wrote his written representation to the NTSB, he told them that it happened just after he crossed about 500 foot of altitude. That is, altitude above the ground, he said. And yet, we know from the video evidence that he was in no way above the ground, and he was in no way at 500 feet. So these varying representations of either 300 or 500 feet, whether above ground or not, the video evidence tells us a completely different story. And that's really, well, I'm not sure we should get into it right now. It's kind of detailed as a pilot. But as I mentioned, making turns really close to the ground, especially uneven terrain and a coastline and potentially water spray and all of that, is just not something you would do. But if we look at the video, which conveniently the videographer has prepared for us, we see that the pilot was probably above 1,000 feet before the videographer turned his camera off. We have imagery of the cliffs on the south side of the Kalaupapa Peninsula, and we have other site images as of, for example, there's a lighthouse. We know the height of that lighthouse, so we can say by the angle, which seems not to change, and the climb rate that the pilot has reached, that is, we can calculate from the time he left the ground to the time he reached certain altitudes, say level with the lighthouse and so forth, we know how fast he was climbing, and we can see the confirmation of that in the video imagery, so that we can say very confidently the pilot did not turn or did not have any failure of his engine before reaching 1,000 feet. But he's chosen to tell people that it was 300 or 500 feet above ground where that so-called catastrophic engine failure occurred.
And so, okay, well, I got to stop you because we're getting close to a break. But just to recap here, you've got a small plane flying out of off the island. You've got a 90 degree turn, unheard of, except maybe the infamous Gitmo turn, you know, that pilots have to make when they're approaching Guantanamo, or at least that used to be the case.
Yeah, you would do that maybe, but not with eight paying passengers behind you.
Yeah, it's a little bit troublesome, and you've got a written statement that is not consistent with a video documentation.
We're talking with Rex about the investigative findings from the Loretta Fuddy plane crash, Loretta Fuddy being the sole fatality in this strange plane crash with just a number of odd circumstances surrounding it. Also, she was the gatekeeper to the Obama birth certificate in Hawaii. We're going to be right back right after these short messages with Rex to get into this more, and we got a lot more about this topic both today and tomorrow. Stay with us.